This is London Real. I am Brian Rose. My guest today is Robert Kiyosaki, the entrepreneur, educator, and investor, best known as the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. How does a nine-year-old kid in Hawaii, a poor kid, get to this point?
Yeah. Well, I wasn't poor by most people's standards, but I came from a family with a poor attitude, if you know what I mean, because rich, poor, middle class, poverty starts with a fundamental attitude. So I was in Hawaii, I was 9 years old. My father was the head of education, you know, PhD. Very smart man, good guy. And for some reason, we moved across town and I went to a school with rich kids. So when I was 9 years old, I moved to this rich kids school. And these guys, their fathers owned the banks, they owned the plantations, they owned the car dealerships, they owned the meat packing company, they owned the ranches. And I'm going, how come my dad doesn't own that? So I remember raising my hand when I was 9 years old, talking to my fourth grade teacher, and I said, you know, when am I gonna learn about money? She says, the love of money is the root of all evil. We don't teach money at school. I said, why not? And then I got curious. I said, why don't we learn about money? She says, go ask your father. He's my boss. So my father was the head of education. I go home and ask him, I said, why don't we learn about money in school? And he looked at me and says, because the government doesn't let us teach that subject. The government tells us what we can teach and what we can't teach. And I thought that was strange. And I said, but aren't we going to school to learn about money? He says, no, your job is to get a job. I said, but you get a job to earn money. He goes, no, you're supposed to just get a job. I went, no. Isn't the purpose of a job to earn money? He goes, you're correct. I said, so why don't I just learn about money? I can skip the job part, you know. But he says, if you want to learn about money, why don't you ask your best friend's father about money? And I said, why? That's Mike. So I ask him. He says, because Mike's father is an entrepreneur. And I said, what are you? He says, I'm an employee. I'm a government employee. And I went, oh, what's the difference? He says, the difference is an entrepreneur must know about money, or they're no longer entrepreneurs. And he says, an employee doesn't have to know anything about money because the government will take care of them, the company will take care of them. But I took my dad's advice and I trundled over to Mike's father's office and knocked on his door and I said, hey, I'm here, 9 years old, teach me about money. And finally, through persistence, my rich dad started teaching me about money on one condition. And that condition was he would never pay me. He says, the moment I pay you, you think like an employee. He says, that's the trap. Entrepreneurs work for free. He says, you never want a paycheck. You understand that, kid? I said, okay, I got it. And he says, well, how do I make money? He says, that's what entrepreneurs figure out. You know, it's like, so how do I learn about money? So he would just break out a Monopoly game board. So I would work for free. I'd pick up cigarette butts and he had hotels and restaurants and I would clean and do menial tasks, but I always work for free. And he would teach me about money. But the way he taught me about money was playing Monopoly. And I finally, one day, I got upset. I said, well, when are you going to teach me about money? He says, what do you think we're doing? We're playing Monopoly. He goes, no. What do you think we're doing? We're playing Monopoly. He says, what do you think we're doing? So I don't know. I'm teaching you about money. And then that's when, you know, you have one greenhouse. You know, he says, there's many formulas for great success in money. There's thousands of them. But one of the best ones found on the game of Monopoly. It still is today. Four greenhouses, one red hotel. I said, what? He says, one of the greatest ways to acquire great wealth is playing Monopoly in real life. Four greenhouses, one red hotel. Went, is that all there is? He goes, that's it. And he says, what do you think I'm doing? And I went, I don't know. So then he took me out and he showed me his greenhouses. And 10 years later, when I was 19, I was now in school in New York. And I come back to Hawaii and Rich Dad had bought the biggest piece of land smack dab in the middle of Waikiki Beach. And when you go to Waikiki Beach today, you'll see the Hyatt Regency Hotel. That was his hotel. And he was a great, great teacher. So today when people ask me what I do, they know me as the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I just say I play Monopoly. So I own greenhouses, I own big hotels, I own oil wells, golf courses, businesses. I'm just playing Monopoly. That's all I do.
You know, I re-listened to your book on the flight over from London. And I hadn't listened to it in maybe 6 years. And the first time I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I thought it was a book about money. But when I listened to it a couple days ago, I saw it differently. I saw it as a book about fear, about self-knowledge, about mindset, because you're describing these people and they're in this world that they don't want to acknowledge that they're in. It's almost a prison in their own mind.
Right. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is a book on accounting, income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flow. So to have Rich Dad, Poor Dad be a book on accounting and be the number one personal finance book of all times, that says something. And the mission statement was people teaching people. You can bypass that school system because the school system will never teach you about money. The school system was designed to teach you to be an employee, which is important, or a doctor or a lawyer, a specialist, but never about money. So once I got old enough and I had already retired and I was rich and I was fairly well off, it was kind of a social conscience. I said, I have to share what I know. And the story goes, every publisher turned me down. They said, you don't know what you're talking about. Because they said, savers were losers. Your house is not an asset, and the rich don't work for money. And so the publishers are like my dad, academic superstars, you know, they're A students in school. So they turned the book down. And then Oprah called in 2000. And then the next time I'm on Oprah, and I went from obscurity to world famous, you know, overnight success in 2000. And the book has been on the New York Times bestsellers for 7 years until the New York Times took it off. They said it had been on too long. So that's kind of the story. And, you know, I play a Monopoly in real life. I don't need a job. I don't have a retirement. I don't need a retirement. I don't want the government to take care of me. But I felt a social responsibility to teach. Mm-hmm. And that's what my rich dad did for me.
And you said the book is about accounting, and it is an amazing book on accounting because it makes it understandable.
Yeah.
I took accounting in business school, and I know what you mean.
It's boring.
Yeah. But it is also a book about your own fears, and I think that's why it resonates with people. Because
you're
telling them things they know is true. They know when they look in the mirror they're not making the correct choices. They're not being disciplined. They're doing the wrong thing. And they know they're unhappy in fear their whole lives, waiting for the next paycheck.
And it's understandable. You know, we all have fear. You know, to be truthful, we all have fear. It's just how you deal with it. You know, Einstein said, you know, imagination is more important than knowledge, but knowledge empowers imagination. And what most people lack is real business knowledge, like accounting, you know, like debt, like taxes. You got to know that stuff, but they don't teach it in school to anybody. So, and then when people ask me, how did your rich dad learn this when your poor dad, a PhD, didn't? And the answer is very simply, my rich dad, who's kind of my best friend's father, his father died when he was 13. So rich dad had this family business at 13 to run. So he had to drop out of school, which was his blessing. You know, there's blessings and, you know, sometimes a blessing doesn't look like a blessing, but it turned out to be a blessing. And then his teachers became his bookkeeper, his accountant, his attorney, his banker, his real estate agents. So he has what I call real teachers, not these fake teachers in school. You see, most teachers in school, they're out of ethics. They teach subjects they themselves don't practice. You know, I had the same problem in my MBA program. I got into arguments with the marketing teacher because the guy didn't have a business. And then I got into arguments with the accounting teacher because the accounting teacher didn't know accounting. I knew more about accounting than him because I actually worked in bookkeeping in my rich dad's companies. And so I'm not an accountant, but I understand accounting. So that was the end of my school years because I understood what a fake teacher is. A fake teacher is somebody who just wants a job and they'll teach anything. And that's why, you know, you have to, in life, one of the things I suggest to people, you gotta find a real teacher versus a fake teacher.
How are we doing 21 years later since this book was published? There's more information out there than ever. We've got the YouTube, we've got internet, everything. Are people better educated about money?
No, they're worse off. I mean, you know, I have my little Rich Dad radio show, and tomorrow I'm interviewing these team of, I think they're educational psychiatrists, and their book is called Coddling of the American Mind. It's how they're making, how our school systems are making our students weaker. So in school, they have these things called now trigger effects. So you can't, as a teacher, you can't say anything that might upset the student. They don't want anything that might jar their point of view. So if I went into school, I'd be thrown out. because I threatened them. I would, you know, and to me, isn't school about opening your eyes and minds to new ideas? But that's now out of the system. So everybody's got to be PC, you know, politically correct now. And it's killing us. It's killing the brains of our kids. They're going backwards.
You did a corporate retreat here about a week ago. You do it every year for the last 21 years, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, or Rich Dad Headquarters.
Right.
And you bring all your people together, and you said you started talking about something new that you didn't always have as a theme of your retreats. What was that?
Well, this year, and I'm putting it back into the business, was my success comes from spirituality, not finance. And what happened was when my wife and I started Rich Dad back in 1996, actually, we left the spirituality out. And then the corporate types came in, you know, the MBAs and the accountants and attorneys, and they tried to make it into a business. And I said, no, we're just a bunch of merry men who are kind of like Robin Hood and his gang.
Are you Robin Hood? Taking from the rich and giving to the poor?
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe in giving to the poor.
But you're giving knowledge to the poor.
Yes, that's a very big difference. You see, people say, well, why don't you give the poor money? So the only problem with that is it just creates more poor people.
Give a man a fish, he fishes for the day, or eats for the day.
Yeah, you give a man a fish, you get a lot of people who want more fish, you know? But you teach them to fish.
But you are the Robin Hood of knowledge, because I see you giving this knowledge out, and
do
the rich people cringe and say, don't tell them that, Robin?
Yes. Don't tell people what you know.
Right.
Keep them poor. But, you know, unfortunately, the poor, as was in the Bible, I'm not real religious, the poor will always be amongst us, because it starts up here.
Right. It's that fear mentality.
But when they say, I can't afford it, or I can't do that, they go down. They become what they say. And I meet so many people, I can't afford it. You think I made of money? Poor people say, I can't afford it. I can't do that. I don't have time. Because this is an escape. It's an escape. You know what I mean? It's easy to say, I can't afford it.
And you play it safe and you don't introduce new
Correct.
Risks into your life. And
right.
so
I have job security.
Right. And your rich dad used to say what instead of, I can't afford it?
How can I afford it? How can I do that? You know, what would it take? Or why should I do that? He says that a question opens a mind, a statement closes the mind. So when you say, I can't afford it, your mind shuts down and you become what you say. But the thing is that we become creatures of our own habits. And until we break the habit, we don't change. You know, people say, well, money is not that important to me. Then if money is not that important to you, money is not important to you. I mean, you know what I mean? I don't care about money. The money doesn't care about you. Or I'll never be rich. Or the favorite one is the rich are greedy. It's the poor that are greedy. You know, if you think about it, because to be rich, you have to give something. You know, I have to produce books and games, and I purchase real estate, I provide housing, provide jobs and all that. That's why I'm rich. But greedy people produce nothing.
I had a guest on my show recently and he said, poor people are selfish. Yeah. Hit a lot of people below the belt. And he said, no, think about it. These people are selfish. They're always complaining about their problems. They're always focused on their own issues.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Well, the way you get rich, you solve other people's problems.
Right. That's how you create value.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If you could cure cancer today, you'd be a trillionaire. Well, when people ask, you know, like, how did I get on Oprah? How did I write a book with Donald Trump, now president of the United States? Not that I'm endorsing him. How could I have done that? Well, it wasn't my brain. It was, you know, Oprah had to be on the program because she's concerned also. Trump and I wrote the book together because we both had rich dads and we both are advocates for financial education. But we didn't get together for about money because we both had rich dads who taught us how to make money. Our schools don't teach that. Our schools teach almost the exact opposite of that. So anyway, how does a guy like me, a little kid with no money, and it wasn't I was poor, we're very middle class, you know. I think my father was making about $20,000 a year. And when I graduated from school, from college, I was making $120,000 a year. And I was 21 years old. And he goes, how'd you do that? I said, I didn't go to the same school you went to.
You used your mind in a different way.
No, I just followed my heart. And so the people right now who are sitting at home, who are struggling financially or worried about money or unhappy, they may be making a lot of money, but unhappy with what they're doing. It was probably taught to you. You know, your super ego was taught, get a job, work hard, or you'll never be rich, or the rich are evil, or whatever.
And until you change your mindset, correct, money won't help you, right?
Correct.
And we see that with people that win the lottery, people that make more money, they still have the same problem.
Right.
Because they have that poor man's soul.
Right. If you're poor, you'll always be poor.
That's really hard for people to understand.
Yeah, the money will disappear that fast. Just like most pro athletes, you know, they make millions of dollars and what, 65% are bankrupt 5 years later? It's because they come from poor families. Now you tell them that, they get very angry at you. It's not, it's the rich fault. You know, it's you guys ripped me off and government ripped me off. That's the frightening thing.
Try to change that, yeah, that soul, that DNA, and introduce a real different mindset.
Yeah. Well, is they've got to teach them, you know, as Einstein said, imagination is more important than knowledge. Yeah, but you got to have the basic knowledge of taxes, debt, financial statements, and all that. If you don't want to learn it, I can't help you. So my poor dad never wanted to learn what my rich dad was teaching me.
Right.
Well, one of my best teachers was R. Buckminster Fuller. He created the geodesic dome and all that.
Yeah.
And he was kind of the guy that straightened me out spiritually. And he always talked about he talked about generalized principles. And these are principles that are always true, no exceptions. So if you drop a stone in the water, the ripple always goes out this way. It's called precession. He says, there's no exception. You can't drop a stone in the water and there's no ripple. It's always a ripple. So no matter what we do, we're always creating ripples. So that's called precession. Ephemeralization is our ability to do more with less. So you look at our cell phone now, it has more horsepower than the Sperry computer 50 years ago. You know, that's doing more with less. So humans are getting more and more powerful. We have more power to us. Unfortunately, we're not evolved as human beings. You know, it's horrifying. We're more antagonistic, more antisocial. You know, social media is antisocial. People are so antagonistic. That's the danger part. So the reason I'm speaking on spirituality, we got to evolve. One generalized principle is emergence through emergency. So when you look at the word emergency, the base word is emerge. And what Fuller says, the only way humans evolve is via emergency.
Crisis.
Crisis. And a big one's coming. And it's going to be, as we all know, our banks have ripped us off. But, you know, the bankers rip off trillions and they get bonused in billions. Nobody goes to jail.
I spoke to you yesterday and asked about the next 3 weeks. You're traveling all around the world. And I said, Robert, why are you traveling so much? And you said, because I need to let people know that this crash is coming and that these problems are out there. You feel like you have a mission to let people know about this.
It's a sense of that, yes.